This is the Cube Show on Demand. Listen live weekdays 6 to 10. Get loud.
I really don't understand your question. I don't know if I can't hear or you guys can't talk in the mic or whatever.
Get crazy.
You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Get nuts.
Get up, baby. Get up. Oh, yeah, it's gone.
It's the Cube Show.
This is All Born Radio.
I'm a good person.
Man, y'all take it easy down there on the off, baby.
God want us to win the World Championship.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing the wrong things.
Is anybody else tired or is it just me?
Hey, legitimate question, though.
Okay.
I'm drunk right now.
Wow.
Another one!
I.
And now, Cole Kublick.
He is bad Auburn man.
North Alabama, welcome in. Cube Show. Sports Radio 730 and 103.9. The I'm glad you're with us here on a Wednesday morning. Got a good show planned for you today. Barrett Salillo talks some SEC football with us. Kevin McAlpin talks Braves at 7 a.m. Aaron Suttles at 7:20. We'll talk some Alabama wide receiver depth, something they might need. A little issue coming down yesterday. Laura Rutledge from Omaha at 8:20. Talked to her just about the College World Series, what's been happening there. And then also coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Abby Kowal will be with us from TexAgs.com. The Aggies eliminated yesterday from the College World Series. Arky Shea, producer of the show, program director of Sports. How are you doing this morning?
Man, I don't know what it is, but I am, like, really tired.
You know what it is?
I am really tired this morning. Like, and I think I got decent sleep last night. You ever had this happen to you?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, you feel like, okay, I know you guys have a baby and stuff, a new baby and another one that's toddler.
No, but I mean, there are nights when I feel like I go to bed early and I don't wake up a ton during the night and I should feel great and I come in here and just can't get it together.
And you're just like, what? What? This is actually a good day. Actually, this should be, if I'm doing science right, go to bed, get a decent amount of sleep.
Doing science right.
Don't wake up a lot. You should wake up and be like, maybe not completely refreshed, because I've never been that guy that can just hop out of bed in the morning and just be like, time to kill it, rise and grind, baby. I've just always been like the guy like, okay, well, I'm not miserable, so let's get up and go to work. So it's a little... it's a little weird to be like going so counter science like this, you know. Like
maybe
like,
it's I'm not weird dragging. Science.
I'm not dragging. It's just like a little like when I was driving in. I'm not gonna lie, my eyelids were getting really heavy.
What's like a 10-minute drive for you? That's not good.
Yeah, it's like a 12-minute drive, and I'm like, what is going on? Because I used to when. The wife and I were dating, and we would go back and forth and see each other. And I was in Auburn at the time, and she was up here in Madison. I would we would freak, like she would come down there, spend a weekend, and then leave like, you know, Sunday night. But I would come up here, leave Monday morning at like 4. That way, I can get back in Auburn in time to be at my 9 a.m. job, and at the radio station. And I remember then, just because being up so early in the monotony of driving 4 hours, that got tiring and my eyelids would get heavy. I didn't think a 12-minute drive that I would have enough time for my eyelids to be heavy. So it's really weird this morning. Really weird.
Yeah. Strange. I'm tired every morning. And I think that's one advantage that I have of having a little bit longer drive into work is I've gotten to the point now where I kind of need that. I feel like if I, like Tom Abraham had a studio in my home, that I would sleep until 5:50 and then just rush downstairs and try to be ready. And it would probably work against me. But that 22, 25-minute drive in every day,
sort of allows me the time that I need to just get my bearings in order. It's just enough time for me to sort of get out of that foggy state of, man, I need to be in bed still. No one should be awake at this point in time. Yep. Actually, what's been pretty cool, too, this is really corny and nerdy of me, but like the last few days coming over the Bill Steamboat Memorial Bridge, the only reason I know what the name of that is because there's a filter on Snapchat that tells me, indicator, there have been just beautiful sunrises like the last 3 days. Mm. It's been pretty impressive.
Yeah, sunsets have been pretty cool, too.
Yeah, there was... I mean, I was good on sunset photographs on social media yesterday afternoon. I mean, Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat in North Alabama were loaded with sunset photos yesterday.
All right, I'm gonna come with a hot take.
I don't need every single one of them.
I'm gonna come with a hot take right now.
Hot take.
I thought Monday sunset was better. Hmm. I thought Monday sunset was better.
That is a hot take.
And it's actually just being sensationalist, as I know you probably
there are listeners that hate you for that
accusing
right now.
Me right now. I legitimately looked out.
Monday sunset ain't played nobody.
It's a group of five sunset, what that was. I was literally out on our back stoop porch thingy, whatever it is.
He resigned.
Because it's not really a porch. It's just you go out and then there's like some concrete we put down. And then, like, a pergola that just sort of stands above it, and that's where our sort of outdoor patio area is. And I was just standing
sometimes
out there.
I feel like I'm in pergola every day here with you, too. Just
well,
waiting.
You're welcome.
For the better things to
you're
come
along. You're
welcome
for that. Pergola is a good thing, I think, right? I sit there just staring at it. I was like, wow, this is really nice out here. This is a really nice sunset. And then yesterday I saw the sunset. I was like, okay, that's a solid sunset.
Wow, you know. I like that you're sitting on your back porch grading, rating sunsets now.
Listen, you grade tape, I grade sunsets.
Give it a six. Six, yeah. Too many clouds today.
I could make one of those Twitter accounts that likes to rate dogs. I can just start rating sunsets. Just put it to, this is a seven.
North Alabama seven. Sunset, 7.5 on a Wednesday.
Hey, was it midnight today or midnight tonight? That summer officially starts. I think it's midnight tonight.
You were talking
tonight.
About this yesterday at lunch. I don't.
I think it's midnight tonight.
I thought it
the
started
22nd.
Like about a week ago.
Well, the temperature wise, yeah. Because Thursday, is it Thursday or we're going to get like 200 degrees?
There's one day this week that is supposed to be insanely hot.
See, it's not even giving me that.
Yeah, it doesn't look bad. Maybe it's due to humidity. 88 Thursday and Friday seems to be the high.
See, that was the chance that Jason Simpson, who almost got unfollowed by me when he tweeted that over the weekend, there's a chance we can get 100 this week. But maybe because that tropical storm's going to start hitting on us tomorrow, that it's a different thing.
It's going to hit on us?
Well, you know, it likes how we, you know, wiggle. That's our thing.
We had a great lunch yesterday, by the way, Dreamland.
Oh, we did.
On Jordan Lane. On University right there by Jordan Lane. It was your first time. First time at Dreamland.
Yeah.
You didn't go with ribs, which was a little disappointing. And usually the only thing that I'll allow that aren't ribs are nachos there, and you didn't even do that. So
no, I went. Well, I was trying something. Listen, I knew you were going to get ribs. I'm going to take one of your ribs, all right? But I was trying something I'd never had in general before, and I wanted to see how Dreamland did it. And I had like the beef tips.
Correct.
And chips. Man.
Those chips were good. They do like their homemade chips now. Those are always, always solid.
Yeah, the chips were legit. The tips were legit. I was super happy. My tummy was super good. Had the banana pudding.
Oh, man.
Oh, so yeah. Okay, so I can see why you brag about it all the time. And the reason I waited is because I wanted to come and wanted to have my first experience, my first time be with Cole Kublik and Tom Abraham and Antonio McBeath and
Garrett came and joined us.
Yeah, I was going to say, and a guy who changed his Twitter handle to something I don't understand.
Yeah, we didn't ask him that yesterday. Why did we not ask him that?
I don't know. We really should have gotten to him on it.
But overall, your first experience at Dreamland, a positive?
Oh,
you enjoyed it?
Highly positive. Highly. Could not I would actually saw my wife that night and I was like, you know, I went to Dreamland today. She's like, I know. I saw Cole's Twitter and Snapchat. It's like, oh, okay. What about my okay, whatever. And she's like, you want to go there? I was like, I'd love to go there. She's like, well, we'll go tomorrow. So we're going today.
You're going back to back.
Yeah, back to back.
Are you
going to
do ribs today?
Well, I had a rib from you yesterday, and it was good. I'll probably go ribs today.
Or barbecue sandwich, I hear, is phenomenal. I've never had it because I'm sort of a one-item guy. When I fall in love with something on a menu at a place, I usually just get that every single time. Like, there are certain Mexican restaurants in town that I get fajita beef, soft taco, whole wheat tortilla, and I will never change that up. Yeah. Never change that up.
Well, that's an interesting point. Are you the guy that goes to a restaurant in general, and like, if you find something you like, you stick with it forever?
Yes.
Or can you be the guy that goes to a restaurant several times and tries something different every time?
I guess I could be the guy that tries something different, but I'm just not. I've had too many bad experiences of, I know there's something phenomenal there, and I want to open it up and try something new, and it ends up not even being average. And I'm like,
if I just
could have had something phenomenal. Instead, I'm stuck with something average.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll go with something that I know is a winner every single time. I ain't never been them, but winner.
If I'm trying something new, I'll try to go to a safe area, like with a safe meat, like chicken. And I'll be like, okay, this is about as safe as they going to be. Because, again, I'm paying for this. So if I'm going with the...
You are paying for it. Not yesterday, you weren't.
No, no. But now if I go there and I know the beef tips and ribs are phenomenal, if I go try something else, I know I'm possibly paying for two things that day. Well, I should be paying for one. Quick, the biggest question we haven't really broached is what was up with Tom Abraham yesterday? He had chicken tenders at a barbecue place.
Did he order off the kids menu? I didn't know they had those there. Honestly, I didn't even know they had them.
And I have nothing against chicken tenders. I love chicken tenders.
At Dreamland, though.
But it's like, yeah, it's like...
barbecue sandwich. Even like the whole chicken that I've gotten there before is pretty good. We had sausages and appetizer, which is phenomenal. They have wings now, which are good. But yeah, chicken tenders, that didn't seem like even appropriate.
If you go to a specialty...
It's almost a slap in the face.
If you go to a place that specializes in one food... barbecue, shouldn't you get some type of barbecue from there? Because that's their thing, right? So clearly they're good at it. It's
yeah.
So weird. It's so weird. I judged them so harsh.
It's kind of like getting... I mean, chicken fingers is what... that seems to be the alternative item at any restaurant, no matter what their specialty is. Like Olive Garden, if you just didn't trust what they do well, you just go chicken fingers.
You guys got chicken tenders? You better.
If you go to Outback and you're like, I just don't know if these guys really do steaks very well, I'm going to play it safe and go chicken fingers today.
But if you go to a steakhouse or go to a barbecue place, you should get their specialty. Like, you should get the realm of what they specialize in.
I agree. I went full slab in banana pudding. So
you did. You did get full slab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
And I think it...
As Bruce Feldman would say, there's no need to pussyfoot around that.
You're darn right there's not.
That Dreamland menu.
It is over.
So, yeah. Let's get the 10 after tweets now. Brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
Speaking of weather.
Is it time to be weather aware?
And hotness! AP West Region at AP West Region. 9 hours ago tweets. Meteorologists say Phoenix topped out at 119 degrees Tuesday.
No, liar. No, there's no way. That's on Earth.
Amid extreme heat wave in southwestern U.S. states.
Really? Extreme heat wave? Couldn't tell me that by the 119 degree temperature.
I'd be okay if you guys rephrase that to extreme heat tidal wave. Because I feel like heat wave just doesn't do 119 justice. Now, I've been to Vegas many times. I've been to Phoenix and Scottsdale many times.
It's
and
a
what
dry
people
heat.
Will tell you it's a dry heat, but yes, it's nice that you don't really sweat. But the reality is, it's still really hard to breathe.
You know what dry heat is? Your oven. Your oven's a dry heat. Still hot. Let's say right now the Pac-12 network called you. He said, we want you to come to Arizona. We will pay you whatever you want. What will it take for you to have to live in Arizona year-round?
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I would love to live in Scottsdale.
No, they're not going to put you in Scottsdale. They'll put you in, like, Phoenix.
It's the same thing. It's like Huntsville, Madison.
I mean, Scottsdale's the richer part of Phoenix.
Okay.
Listen, it's like Homewood in Birmingham.
It wouldn't take much to convince me to live out there. Really? I love it out there, yeah.
We just had this conversation
about... It's like 65 in the winter.
About how perfect. You sweat. Yeah, it's comfortable here in the winter, too. It rarely gets super cold.
No, but I'm telling you, you don't sweat. Your sweat evaporates. You don't get all sweaty. You just don't. It is a very weird thing.
No, and I don't just mean the sweat. I just mean how hot it is, how miserable that would feel. Just walk out into an oven.
Doesn't feel great. I'll never forget the first time I went, and my flight landed at like 9 p.m. And when those double doors opened and I walked out of the airport, it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, you just can't breathe. Yeah, your body has to get acclimated to that.
Did you keep walking, or did you, like, stop for a second?
I was kind of like, wow, this is, I didn't expect this. I knew it was going to be hot, but come on.
I'm going to go ahead and start taking some clothes off now, because this is not going to end well for everybody.
You do sweat, you just don't get as sweaty as you do here in the humidity.
Well, yeah, the humidity kills you here. Like, you literally can cut through during deep summer times, cut through the atmosphere with a knife. I've done it before.
Will Butler at Now More Than Ever tweets, "This literally made my skin crawl. Quote, location means a lot more than, quote, room for asphalt." It's MLB.com's description of SunTrust Park. It says, "Parking is distributed 360 degrees around the ballpark, making SunTrust Park's location its greatest asset."
Oh, that's cute. What about, like, the freeze? Isn't that one of its greatest assets?
Nope.
The chop house?
Nope. It has asphalt all the way around it.
What about the fact that they brought over the Chick-fil-A chicken?
Nope.
I mean, the cow from the other...
360-degree parking. By the way, it's the first time ever in SunTrust Park history that there's been an online description of their parking.
Are you going to archive that?
Oh, yeah.
Or at least send it to the Braves head higher up and be like, this should go in your museum.
I'm saving it. Boy, this is something we need to discuss later today. Jimmy Hyams, at Jimmy Hyams, tweets, Fulmer said, "Football coach Butch Jones has done a great job in rebuilding program, but he needs to take that next step, and he knows that." Tennessee hired Philip Fulmer yesterday.
Yeah, to be like a special advisor.
Because that works well at most places.
About to get a football field named after him. Chances they named the football field after. Something's got to be named after Philip Fulmer there.
They're inviting the meddling, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, Tennessee does not have 35 national championships. They can afford to name a field after him.
I kind of regret having Mike Griffith on yesterday and not today to be able to ask him about this.
Don't tell him.
Chris Crow tweets at Cube Show, hashtag humidity sucks. Wayne Carter tweets at Cube Show, went to Nathan's at Coney Island and my wife ordered chicken fingers. Hashtag the Nathan's.
Like the Nathan's hot dogs you can buy at the place they started making them.
Yeah, you're kind of supposed to get a hot dog there. Even if you don't like them, just say, I had one or I tried it.
It's so weird.
Chris Crow tweets at Cube Show, you definitely have to push the envelope to explore the menu.
Yeah, Cole doesn't like to do that. And
if I find something really good.
I have a friend who's very, very smart. He's an engineer. He's that same guy as far as... Why, if I know what I really like here, there's no need to really go that much exploring.
No.
Like, we're not trying to look for new islands in the Pacific. I'm just trying to be happy with my dinner.
AL.com Sports tweets, Philip Fulmer is back with Tennessee Vols, this time as a special advisor to the university's president.
Guess he gets an office.
Congrats, Tennessee. You are the new Auburn.
They've always been working for that. Always been working for that. You know, I think Philip Fulmer should go on to a documentary about Tennessee and Florida and then say something like, not everyone's lily white.
Eric Ainge, at Eric Ainge 3, tweets, T.Y. at John_Curry. That's the new athletic director at Tennessee, if you didn't know. The number 4 hiring at Philip Fulmer back into the UT system. It means a lot to me as an alum. And hashtag VFL to know we are all on the same page. Who said this?
Eric Ainge. The guy who tried to throw one fast pitch softball style against LSU while being DDT'd into the goalpost and it ended up being an interception.
That guy.
Okay, so maybe that's... Okay. I don't know if all Tennessee fans are on the same page. A lot of Tennessee fans wanted Philip Fulmer considered for the athletic director spot.
Yeah.
Do you think there are any hard feelings?
Tell me why this is such a good idea.
He played there? I don't know.
Is that what's going to make our program progressive and forward-thinking and going to bring in all these great ideas that's going to help us be a championship-caliber team? Or is it we're going to do it like we did in 98?
Do you think he would meddle?
Go get a Jamal Lewis, and go get a Leonard Little, and go get an Al Wilson, and go get a Chad Clifton, and a T. Martin. And that's how you did it.
Is Chad Clifton available?
I don't think his contract's up yet.
Do you think he would be a meddler? I mean, it'll be tempting. I don't know if Philip Fulmer will be just like a check casher and like go to a few meetings, or if he would want to like try to stick his nose in.
I don't think you can be a head coach who's won at an institution, especially and played there, and be employed by them and not be in some form or fashion. Now, if his role was fundraising, totally different deal. Because then you're just asking him to go make appearances, shake hands, make people happy, tell people they should be a part of the program, so on and so forth. But his job title is to advise the president on football-related topics. First off, what has Philip Fulmer been doing in the realm of college football the last 10 years?
It's one of the questions I was going to bring up with this, which is...
So he has a pretty good idea on how to go win right now?
It's like, if he's an advisor, what can he advise you on winning?
Like from, I just said, how to do it in 98.
Was 2007 his last year? 2005? Or 2008, maybe?
But I would think VFLs would like him to do it like he did in 98, not
Oh, no, that's when he won the championship, sure. It's just... He's been away for a while.
I was just surprised to see the amount of, oh, this is great, this is a home run on social media yesterday. Now, if he was your coach and he recruited you and gave you a scholarship, I understand that you like that move. But I don't understand a tweet like what Eric Ainge puts out. Why can't you just say, hey, I like him, I'm glad he's back.
Glad
he was good to me, therefore I'm glad he's back.
Glad to see we're all on the same page.
Do we really think Philip Fulmer and Butch Jones are on the, quote, same page? Actually, better not be on the same page if Butch Jones wants to continue to win. Otherwise, if they were on the same page, wouldn't Philip Fulmer still be coaching?
Interesting point you bring up there, Cole. Maybe he would still be coaching.
It's just, all it is reverting back to good old boy network. Again, college football and the good old boy network. They just can't get away from it. Some places just cannot get away from it. And Alabama should be the prime example, the litmus test for everyone out there that says, if you get the right guy and escape that, look what good things can happen. Or you can just sit back there and try to do it like you did in 98.
No
or,
offense.
Or 83.
You worked in 98. And it worked in 83. It was 2017, and Butch has got things under control, clearly.
All right, we'll get to a break, come back, and get physical right after this. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Barrett Salee coming up in 9 minutes. But every morning we get physical. We let you know who's healthy, who's hurt, who's banged up. Let's do it, Arky. I get no doubt. We'll revisit this with Aaron Suttles at 7:20 this morning. And not just talk this, but sort of talk Alabama receivers and the depth chart at that position. But apparently yesterday, Alabama wide receiver Robert Foster posted images to his Facebook page after he struck a car while riding his dirt bike on Saturday, received 27 stitches, took out the windshield of the car. It's a pretty brutal accident, it appears. Torn up pretty bad, no broken bones. Figures like he'll be back, but sort of begs the question of, you know, is he going to be that go-to guy that a lot of people thought he was going to be this year, or is someone else going to step up and be sort of the number two to Calvin Ridley there in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. Is it going to be someone like Judy? Is Judy going to step up and be that guy? So Alabama's got some options. It's just going to see who ends up being it. But getting on a dirt bike and running into a car, that sucks, man. I'm just gonna do another hot take this morning.
Probably didn't feel good.
Not cool.
He caught 5 passes for 55 yards last year.
Yeah. Well, with
he's been beat up though. He has not been healthy.
With clearly the way he runs routes on his dirt bike, if that's anything like what he does on the field, he's not gonna get on the field often.
Ooh.
It just seems not very sharp.
No. Not a great idea.
You think the car thought he was coming over the middle? Cole, let me take you to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, home of your 2017 Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Pred Nation. Pred Neck Nation. Preds fans. Whatever you guys are at this point. Where there is a man who went to the news to talk about an issue that he's had for 13 years. And that issue is, there's an alarm clock he has going off every single day that's stuck inside a wall.
Oh, no.
Yep. Every day since September of 2004, an alarm clock hidden inside the wall of a home near Pittsburgh goes off every single night at 6:50. The homeowners are trying to figure out why this happens to be, but apparently we have now, after some investigation, figured out why. The man told KDKA, which is your TV station that you like in Pittsburgh.
My favorite station.
That back in 2004, he tied the alarm clock to a string and set it to go off 10 minutes later and then lowered it down an air vent to help him find a spot to drill for a TV wire. Soon after he lowered the clock, the string broke and the clock fell inside the wall. He said, quote, "Then I thought, well, that's not a real problem." And little did you know, 13 years later, every night at 6:50, it's going off.
Wow. And those things go off for a while, too, before the automatic, I guess, shut down.
We had a guy when I was in college, when I was an RA, every morning at 7:05, his alarm would go off. But, like, this guy, like, basically spent, like, one day every 3 weeks in his dorm room. And so it would go off for, like, 20 minutes.
You could hear it.
Yeah, everybody could hear. People would come to complain at my door at 7:10 in the morning and be like, "Hey, can we figure this guy out?" The guy was never there.
I can't remember.
I used the master key to get in and fix it.
Yeah, when somebody wouldn't be in their dorm room and right next to us and their alarm would go off and it would just keep going off. And it's like you couldn't get in there to do anything. So
just want to punch through the wall.
Arky, what's the weirdest thing that you think a hockey player would retire for?
Sinus infection.
Marian Hossa may retire early from the Chicago Blackhawks. Potentially played his final game in the NHL due to a serious allergic reaction.
Oh.
To the equipment he wears.
Oh.
According to Sportsnet's Elliot Friedman, Hossa currently has 4 years remaining on his deal with the Blackhawks. He scored 26 goals last season. He's 38. But there's a legitimate possibility he's played his final NHL game. He's having an allergic reaction to the equipment that he's wearing. He hopes to find some clarity in the coming few days, but could be a big issue there for Chicago.
Could you imagine trying to play at Auburn and being allergic to, like, your helmet?
No. It'd like, be a bad spot to be in.
Your face just starts swelling. Your eyes just get puffy.
Not fun.
You're like, what is this?
Yeah, not good. No. All right, let's get to a break. When we come back, Barrett Salee
Bleacher Report talks SEC football. We'll ask him just about Alabama's receiver depth. How good do they need to be outside Calvin Ridley right after this?
Bring me the tweets!
Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Barrett Salee of Sirius XM Radio and the Smothering Cover podcast joining us now. Talk some SEC football. Barrett, good morning, man. What's up?
Not much, Cole. How are you?
Doing well. This news about Alabama receiver Robert Foster yesterday, riding his dirt bike, getting hit by a car, 27 stitches, might not impact him very much during the season, but I do believe that it's important that an alternate receiver step up to take some pressure off Calvin Ridley. And if Brian Daboll's offense is what I think a lot of us believe it will be, maybe more run heavy, but also more of the vertical passing game and not so much of the behind the line of scrimmage passing game, you're going to need more receivers to step up and help make some of those plays. How critical is receiver depth for Alabama this fall, in your opinion?
It is. I mean, because, you know, you had a different offensive coordinator last year, and you saw Calvin Ridley's responsibility change a little bit, and that's gonna change, you know, now. I think when you have different quarterbacks, when you have different schemes, you know, last year when you had Lane Kiffin in year three, I think everyone thought Calvin Ridley was going to be the star as a sophomore, but Jalen Hurts found a little bit of a connection with Ardarius Stewart. Now Ardarius Stewart's gone. So what does that mean for Calvin Ridley? Does he slide back into more of an active role? I think he certainly does, but he's going to have some pressure taken off of him. And I think, you know, a guy like, you know, Robert Foster was supposed to be that guy. You saw him have a good, you know, spring game. You know, Jerry Jeudy certainly has the opportunity now to step in and be a little bit more of an impact player. But my question about Robert Foster is this, like, you know, okay, if you're riding a scooter in the parking lot, whatever, fine. You're a cop player. That's, you know, normal. I used to race dirt bikes. I know they're not street legal. Why are you riding a dirt bike in the parking lot? And more importantly, if you're an Alabama staff member, and there are millions of them, how do you not say, hey, why is that, you know, YZ250F sitting in the parking lot, and whose is that? Like, that's how, I don't understand how something like that happens.
No, I agree. And you get a lot of schools, they'll have kids sign contracts or sign agreements that say certain things you're not allowed to do, and that would probably be towards the top of the list. I mean, we saw a Georgia football player have this issue going into last year. And, you know, some kids aren't going to learn. Some kids are still going to do it. Maybe it wasn't his, but at the end of the day, it did happen. What other aspect of this offense do you need to see something from early on that maybe is a question mark for you right now?
Well, I just wanted to, I mean, the vertical passing game obviously is the number one goal, but, you know, I want to see what happens when the offensive line's out to pass a lot more. Because, you know, you have some changes. You have, you know, Jonah Williams moving over to left, which I think we both feel is going to be fine. But, you know, last year, a lot like Auburn last year, you know, Alabama was asked to do basically different variations of run blocking more times than not. It wasn't necessarily asked to, you know, create pockets for a quarterback to take a 5 or 7 step drop all that often. Well, that's going to probably change a little bit more now. You know, there's certainly going to be some 3 step drops, get it out quick or whatever. But, you know, it's one thing to be really good at what you do best. And Alabama certainly was good up front in the trenches, opening holes for those running backs and Jalen Hurts. What happens when they're asked to do a little bit more, expand their resume a little bit? I don't know. We'll see. But I think I want to see what happens, because I think having Jalen Hurts comfortable in those passing situations is something that they definitely need to have happen.
Barrett Salee with us of SiriusXM and the Smothered and Covered podcast. We had Jerod Powers in studio yesterday, longtime NFL defensive back, played some safety and corner. And we asked him just about how aware are you as a DB of what your front seven, front four are doing from a pass rush perspective and affecting the pocket. And he said, you know, it really did allow me to do a lot of different things from a coverage perspective, because I knew those guys were going to get to the quarterback. And he talked about in college with Pat Sims and Quinn Groves and some of the other guys he played with. He's like, I knew those four were going to get back there. So You know, I could jump a hitch route, or you know, I could take a chance on a potential double move because I knew I would have time to recover, or they weren't going to have time to deliver a different route, maybe deeper. How much do you think the Alabama secondary benefited from that front seven, front four a year ago? And are we maybe inflating what Alabama's secondary was or will be due to how they played?
I think they benefited a lot. I mean, that was a big reason why they were so successful because, I mean, quite honestly, like, you know, the secondary was good last year for Alabama. I don't know how great it was. I think it was very long on physical talent and guys like Minkah Fitzpatrick and other guys who got drafted. But, you know, even they got burned at times, especially deep. So, I think they could certainly rely on knowing that, okay, in a third down situation when it's third and long, you're probably going to have Ryan Anderson or Tim Williams in there, you know, wreaking havoc, or Jonathan Allen or whoever. So they knew they had the opportunity to take a chance, jump around, turn a pick into a touchdown. Those happened in ideal situations for the secondary. So I think I don't know how much we were inflating it because those guys still have to make those plays, and it's not easy to do that. And certainly the receivers are in the same situation where they know, okay, we're in a bad situation here. You're going to have to come out of your route early because there may be some pressure or whatever. But it certainly did benefit that secondary that they consistently could count on those pass rushers to get home, you know, in situations where they could impact the scoreboard.
Visiting with Barrett Salee, Smothered and Covered podcast, also Sirius XM Radio, just talking Alabama football as we approach the 2017 season, and with Brian Daboll as the offensive coordinator. I mean, when you go back and look at what Lane Kiffin did, a lot of success in a lot of different ways. How different are you anticipating this offense to look just on the surface from a personnel, from a formation standpoint, and I guess from a style and pace of play standpoint in 2017?
I don't expect it to look any different. And I know folks will say, well, you know, and look, even Nick Saban had to answer a question about ball control offense a few months back. I don't expect it to be different. I mean, you look at what Lane Kiffin was. He was tempo-based with Blake Sims. It was real run-heavy with Jake Coker. Derrick Henry won the Heisman. Last year, it was real tempo-based zone read, kind of new school with Jalen Hurts. Nick Saban is not an idiot. Nick Saban knows that he is going to have to be flexible offensively. He may hate some of the things that his offense does, but he's still going to do them. And so I think Brian Daboll is going to basically take last year's offense because I think everybody knows that that works and expand upon it. And it may not be a situation where, you know, you're basically pro-style, run-based, ball-control, time of possession. In fact, I think kind of the idea that Alabama is going to be a ball-control offense is flat-out laughable. They know they can't do that. So what I expect is it to be very similar to last year, and then take a few elements of the passing game that work best and expand on it and essentially become what, you know, if you remember back in 2013 with Auburn, Nick Marshall was really good at four or five things downfield in the passing game. Start with that and then expand upon it as the season goes on because Jalen wasn't really good at that last year. He really wasn't good downfield. There will be some short passes, sure, but I think it's going to basically be the same offense with, a little bit of an expansion in the passing game and then, you know, sort of evolving from there as the season progresses once everybody gets more comfortable.
Going back to the defense, do you, because of some of the things that we mentioned, who's gone, how different they might look, do you expect this to go back to maybe some of the early Nick Saban defenses of being a high-pressure unit? Is Jeremy Pruitt going to have to dial up many more blitzes than they have the last two, 3 years?
I think he might, just because, you know, Jonathan Allen was good, and I don't think people realize how good he was. I mean, it was such an asset to have him there for essentially 4 years in that spot. So, you know, there are good players on that roster, don't get me wrong, and Alabama certainly is loaded with talent, but I think it's a little bit presumptuous to say, okay, well, we're going to lose all of these folks and not miss a beat. So, yeah, I mean, I think you're going to have to dial up a little more pressure. I think it's a little bit presumptuous to say, okay, Alabama won't miss a beat, even though there are great players like, you know, De'Ron Payne in the middle, who's awesome. Deshaun Hand has a ton of talent. You know, Rashawn Evans and John Young Hamilton are great, but they haven't done it consistently. And they, when they were in there, they did it with a guy like Jonathan Allen taking a lot of pressure off of everybody. So, I think it is. It's going to be different, and I think it's again a little aggressive to just assume that plug and play and Aldo. They're still going to be good, but are they going to be as good as last year? I think that's almost impossible at this point in terms of defense.
Great stuff, Barrett. Always appreciate the time. Look forward to catching up next week.
All right, thanks, Phil.
Barrett Salee, lead SEC Southern Smother and Cover podcast in SiriusXM Radio. I think it's going to be intriguing to watch. And I think week one, even though I'm not extremely high on the Alabama front four, front seven is a different deal. I think Sean Dion Hamilton can come back from an ACL and be fine. And I think Rashawn Evans is one of the better athletes at the linebacker position in this league. I've said before, I think if he could line up on the outside similar to the way Tim Williams did last year, he could lead the SEC in sacks. I think he's that kind of a talent playing on the line of scrimmage. But Alabama needs him off the ball a little bit, and he'll do some of those things. But just how Jeremy Pruitt handles it. Does he want to be more of an attack defense? Does he have to be more of an attack defense? Because I don't think they have the individual guys that are going to be able to generate the kind of pass rush that Williams, Allen, Anderson, and even inside Dalvin Tomlinson did some a year ago. And those guys affected the pocket from in between the guards, which is very important. We talked about that with Gerard yesterday, too, how Muschamp says, I need a pass rush in between the guards almost more than I do off the edge nowadays because of how quickly guys are getting the ball out. Kevin McAlpin talks Atlanta Braves next.